Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I would like to acknowledge WNAA, Troy Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Arkansas, as a public service presentation. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with trouble, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, Joseph, and hello, everybody. Nice to be back, and I look forward to tonight's topic and talking about barriers to recovery. The work with families and working with another alcoholic, all of this really blends together to create good recovery. If we go back to basics and back to 1935, when all this began, that was really the key. That's what Bill W. discovered. Talking to Dr. Bob really helped him stay recovery. Dr. Bob said, "Well, you can't help me stay sober." And Bill W. said, "Well, I'm not here to do that. I'm here to keep myself sober." And so what started out to be a 15-minute conversation turned into 6 hours. So we like to take that and retain it and expand it and keep it going in 2012. And it's not an easy road. I find it more and more difficult to get people to come with me and go out and do 12-step calls. And so I'm not sure why, but it's very important for us to keep working with the new guy and make things as easy as we can for the new guy to find the rooms, listen to the people, and then start working the steps with a sponsor. And so Joseph and I both owe our recovery and our lives to the 12 steps and the sponsors with whom we've worked and the people in the rooms. And so we want to help get back to the basics and eliminate some of the myths that have arisen. And so in an effort to do that, Joseph has put together the website, rumradio.org, and this radio broadcast, which puts everything into an audio format, and just to make it easy for people to find a sponsor or for sponsors to find a sponsee. Joseph doesn't make anything from this website or this work. In fact, it costs him thousands to do it, but it's his way of giving back. And so it is with me. I'm not making money here, but it is my way of giving back, and so I do that with great enthusiasm, and just encourage everybody to work with other people. So let me turn it back over to Joseph. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. Today's a little bit of, it's the beginning of the anniversary, or the night before Christmas. This is night before our third year anniversary. September 10th marks the third year of Rum Radio being in existence. We started off with a different kind of website at Dreamweaver, and it was very clunky and not able to manipulate it. And little by little, we've increased it to where it is today. And I like the way it is today. It has a really nice look to it. I believe it's easier to maneuver, and has a lot of really good information that I wish I would have had. We're at 142 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,400 in about 55 towns, cities, and villages, and we're approaching 160,000 hits to the website. There's little or no advertising, so most of these hits are coming from word of mouth, people telling people. I always thought as a person in recovery, I always thought this was going to go viral. That's my grandiosity. And then I thought it was going to go exponential. 5 would get 10, and 10 would get 20, and so on. But actually, the way it really turned out is that 1 will get 2, 2 will get 3, 3 will get 4, and then sometimes 4 will get none, we go back to 1. So it just kind of it just kind of plods along. It's really interesting to look. The biggest hits we're getting right now in Beijing, we're up to 50 hits in a moving week in Beijing, and that's dropped down. Now we're back down to about 480, 500 for the moving week, and I believe that's because the website has a spiritual lilt to it. And I believe, and this is only a guess, is that the censors in China still don't like anything that has God or a spiritual tone to it. And I think the way that people are getting it now, for the most part, in China, is they're creating their own virtual servers. And this way they're able to bypass the censors. Now, this is just a guess, but looking at the numbers, it's interesting to see how that does. So this is our anniversary, and of course, it's the day before the anniversary of one of the modern-day tragedies, 9/11, lest we forget the destruction of the World Trade Center in New York City, which when that happened, that was really quite a shock for me. I'm from New York, had been up in the Trade Towers, had gone, you know, the visiting kind of deal. They were magnificent edifices to capitalism and the American way of life. And if you looked at who died in those towers, it was from people all over the world. So when they attacked the World Trade Centers, they were attacking an icon of American productivity and attacking the world. It was a sad day. So to anybody listening out there, I think it's good to take a pause and to remember that, and remember the poor folks that were up in the towers, that innocent, everyday Joes making a living like we all try to do in a free society. I'd like to start this program like I usually do. You reminded me something, Harold. I went to a citywide meeting. This is a meeting that was created in Austin, and some of the towns have it. Everyone in a particular town, Houston, for instance, has a meeting once a month. Everyone's invited. And then there's a speaker meeting and then a couple workshops. It's a good way to connect up in the fellowship on a larger basis. And I was giving out my Rum Radio cards. One fella said, "Oh, I'm looking for a sponsor." I said, "Well, this is not what this is about." He says, "Yeah, but I need a sponsor." He says, "Would you be my sponsor?" So I have my little routine that I do. I ask him, "Have you had enough?" And he asked, "Well, what do you mean by that? Enough of what? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough degradation? Have you had enough?" He said, "Yes, I've had enough. Are you willing to go any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no?" I said, "Yes, I am." "You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. The first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions." He don't know what that is. "Do you have access to a computer?" "I do." On the website, on the rumradio.org website, there's a tab that's a sponsorship. There's a drop-down box, how to find a sponsee. scroll down a little ways, and there'll be Clancy's seven questions. I need you to go there, answer those questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. Use the cell number. I expect your call. So, oh, this is great. He says, this is very serendipitous. I says, yes, it is. It works that way sometimes. Okay. And then you just reminded me, I didn't hear from him today.
Oh.
Sorry I had to drop that shoe, but the point is that when I do hear from them, they've done the work. I don't believe I'm going to hear back from them tomorrow or the next day or the next week, which is possible. Usually if I don't hear from them back the next day, I just don't hear from them. And it completely slipped my mind. I didn't wait for him to see if he was going to call. If he wanted it enough, he would have called. So it's for a potential sponsor, remember that. You can't get them or keep them sober. They have to do it on their own, but there's certain things they have to do for themselves. So I just move on now. You know, it would have been nice if he called, and in a sense, of course, it's work for a sponsor. Good sponsor puts in effort. I put as much time and effort into their recovery as they do, no more, no less. But they have to be willing to go to that length. And such a phone call is such a little length. Can you imagine giving them something tough to do? So one of two things, he's either not ready or he's not ready for me. He's been sober several months, which is an indication that he's kind of languishing in the rooms right now. He's sitting in the meetings. He's absorbing. He's trying to get this program through the process of osmosis. You know what osmosis is, Harold?
Remind me.
Sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever your flavor of addiction is in the meeting room, sitting there figuring that if you're going to hear enough recovery from the people in there, that it's going to come up through the floor, up the legs of the chair, up your ass, and into your head. That's osmosis. Sort of like osmosis, except coming from the seat. The only way you're going to get this, you have to do it. Yeah, there's work. That work has to be done. Meetings are great. They're fun. They're sexy. They're interesting. Get stuff off your chest. Sometimes you even get to hear actual recovery. Not always. You hear a lot of opinions. You get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. The recovery comes from the solution. The solution comes from working the steps. And the steps, if you're not working the steps, you might be sober, but you're not in recovery. The steps are recovery. And so one of the assignments I would have given this fellow, one of the first ones would be to make sure he finds a home group, someone he can connect with on a intimate level in a group setting. Scott Peck said, intimacy was the ability to share one's reality without fear of judgment or change. And that's what I see in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, or that's what it's supposed to look like. So now you get men, you get 30 men's names if possible, more, a little less, whatever you can do. Some people have newcomers packets, some groups don't. You ask the chair, you get in there a little early, a few minutes early, and ask the chair to pass around a note paper and guys that would be willing to give their phone number out and take a phone call if necessary. You get those numbers, and for the next 30 days, I want you to call up somebody on that list every day, different fella, and ask them permission to recite the third step prayer to them. And the reason I have you do that is I want you to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help. Most of us don't want to help. We're very self-sufficient. We don't like the idea of somebody helping us. We might not mind helping someone else, but we don't like to help. So this starts your humility. Second, it connects you up with the group. They get to know your name. You get to know their name. There's an intimacy that begins with that. This is your lifeline list also, lest I forget. Third, the third step prayer I also call the surrender prayer. And it's the beginning of what we're going to accomplish by working all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, found in the big book of the same name. It's an outline. And fourthly, by you calling that fella, he might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol, and the chances are, once you call, he will not. There's no guarantees, but that's my experience. Most folks love to hear that. It breaks up their day on a positive note, and this is the third step, prayer. So I like to start the program with this, inviting in the Spirit. We invite the Spirit in so the Spirit can talk through us, and you might hear through that. As for me, I'm a nobody and a nothing, but the Spirit has all power. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that, Harold?
Amen.
Thank you, Harold. We're going to do a couple of the from the captain's table. It's one of the drop boxes on the main navigation bar on Rum Radio. These are little insights, little things we've put together. I put together. I found and put together. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge of spiritual understandings, big book understandings, recovery understandings that have served people well. First one is barriers to recovery. We're always interested in about what causes a relapse. This also could be barriers to relapsing. What's a relapse? A relapse is someone who's attained some degree of sobriety and for whatever reason has decided that he needs a drink, wants a drink, can't live without life without the ease and comfort of that first drink. And he takes that drink, goes down the merry road. Hopefully he doesn't go that far, but that's a relapse. The newcomer is life's blood to AA, just like the old timer is the backbone. But relapse is the soul. Relapse is the soul because there's nothing more tormented than a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So these are some of the barriers to recovery. Sobriety will take care of the problems caused by your drinking. Recovery will take care of the problems that caused you to drink. Causes and conditions. Remember, you stop drinking, the other stuff is going to go away, at least to some degree. But the problem that caused you to drink is still there until you work the steps. So here we go. I'll do the first one. Harold, you have anything on that?
Well, it's just very important for me to keep in the forefront of my mind that what it says on page 45 is that selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem. Alcohol is but a symptom. Selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problem. And so the steps, working with a sponsor, being accountable, helping guys newer in the rooms, all of that is our way of getting away from the selfishness and self-centeredness, and that is what causes us to drink, and then in my case, also drug. And I was listening to a TV documentary about recovery and about teenagers, and so many teens are in the grips of addiction, and so many times alcohol is their first drug of choice. Alcohol is a drug, and the kids will drink half a Pepsi and then pour vodka in the can, fill it up, sneak it into school, share it with their friends, be a big shot. And they're escaping reality. Kids have such high stress levels, it's unbelievable these days. And you would think, what do they have to escape? You know, how bad can their lives be? But it is quite serious. teen suicide is on the rise. They have so much stress. They want to drown their problems in drink, and they sneak alcohol into school, and they drink after school, and sometimes they drink at home with their parents. I'm finding more and more. And so the escape from reality is part of that selfishness and self-centeredness, and it doesn't really matter what we use to escape. It's the escape itself, the selfishness and the self-centeredness, and so that's what the steps are all about, and that's what this radio program tonight is all about. Oh, do you feel like giving the number in case somebody wants to call in and join us?
You have read my mind. The guest call-in number, and you're more than welcome to call with an opinion, a comment, or add to the discussion. We'd welcome that. But if you feel that you prefer just listen, then it's okay too. I believe recovery, like life itself, is based on free will or the agency of choice. You have decisions to make. This is a decision to call or a decision to listen, but it's your decision, not mine. The guest call-in is 949-534-0621. And in Mississippi, it's 949-534-0621. Oh, that's the same number. Okay, well, there you go. Relapse is best sensed by the nose, as the language of the body can be easily overblown. I say that if it's hard to understand what that means, it's my little poetic license. People could say whatever they want to say, but sometimes a good sponsor can smell a rat. You could smell alcohol. You could see through the body language if somebody's lying to you. As a fellow addict alcoholic, your sponsor will pick up the sense that something went awry. Something's not right. Can't really put our finger on it, just like, I smell a rat. Something's not right. This is the barriers. The following is a checklist of symptoms leading to relapse, any of which may be barriers to recovery. If the symptoms are caught early enough and recognized, this is where a real good sponsor comes in, the alcoholic will usually try to change his thinking to get back on his addiction treatment program again. A weekly inventory of symptoms might prevent some relapses. So this is something for you personally to take a look at, as well as your sponsors, to see what's going on with your sponsee. See what's going on with you. First one is exhaustion. Have a little quips in there. There might be enough time to rest in the grave. Allowing yourself to become overly tired or in poor health. Some alcoholics are prone to work addictions. Perhaps they were in a hurry to make up for lost time. That was me. Good health and enough rest are important. If you feel good, you're more than apt to think well. You feel poor, and your thinking is apt to deteriorate. Feel bad enough, and you might begin thinking a drink couldn't make it any worse. Drink sometimes is like a holiday, the ease and comfort. Hey, you know, I need a breather. I need to relax. Common thought? Sometimes an alcoholic won't even take it that long. It just feels like the right thing to do. Doesn't even think about it. Just takes that drink. Doesn't even know why. He just does. That's what he's used to doing. That's what he does. Harold?
That's what we do. And one of the – I just love this list of ideas. I call them enemy voices, but one of them is where I begin to deny my fear. And I think sometimes fear can be healthy. It can be a sign of respect. And they're like never turning your back on the ocean. We need to have proper respect for this thing, because if we let down our guard, if we leave an opening anywhere, it'll come in and nab us. We have to keep our guard up, work the steps. And so denying fear is one of the problems. And deciding in early recovery, deciding I will never drink again as long as I live, actually becomes a danger sign. Because if we've made that decision, then we don't really need to work the steps or work with our sponsor or go to meetings. All of that's unnecessary because we've made a once and for all decision. So those are some of the danger signs that also relate here. Joseph?
One of the things I tell my sponsees is sleep when you're tired, rest when you're tired, eat when you're hungry. That sounds like a very simple rule. This is like kindergarten. Some alcoholics, including myself, we drank so much we didn't eat very much.
Yeah.
We'll put off eating. We get that little buzz from the adrenaline, or taking a lot of sugar and try to get that buzz that way, or energy drinks or coffee, and we're not eating and we're pressing on. And all of a sudden there's a crash. And, of course, alcohol, that's when alcohol becomes most potent. So eat when you're hungry, you stop. Take a moment, have your meal, enjoy your meal. When you're tired, rest for a bit. It'll make a big difference in your mental capacity and your ability to ward off, especially early in recovery, to ward off the craving. Dishonesty, too. Our lips begin to move with white lies and half-truths. I like to think in the preamble it says, there's some folks that have grave emotional and mental disorders. Grave. They're not talking about simple. And I'll tell you, I know some folks with schizophrenic, bipolar to the extreme. Grave emotional and mental disorders. They too can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. So one of the critical aspects is dishonesty. If the guy's becoming dishonest. First, of course, he's going to be dishonest with himself before he's dishonest with you. Don't expect a lot of honesty from a new sponsee. They might have been survival. Lying might have been a survival mechanism for a very long time, and to get away with that, to expect them to start telling the truth immediately is a great expectation, to say the least. But you got to start somewhere. So you start off small and start working. This begins a pattern of unnecessary little lies and deceits with fellow workers, friends, and family. Then come important lies to yourself. This is called rationalization, making excuses for not doing for doing what you know you should do. I had a fellow in group who's a writer. He died just recently, and he would lie, little lies. He'd lie every so often about things that would bolster him up. And you would think, why? Why would a guy like this need to be bolstered? Ego is very fragile, no doubt. And he said the only way he was able to get out of that was that when he lied to you, he would turn around to you and tell you that he just lied to you. Whoa. I heard that. I tried that. There was a girl that was interested in me, and I said, no, I didn't get your email, and I made the lie up, and I bolstered up my courage because I had just heard this in a meeting, and I said, you know, I just lied to you. It was hard coming out, but I felt a sense of relief by saying it, and I do that even every so often. I still have to do it this day because sometimes that lie just kind of slips right out to make it an easy passage. I told my granddaughter the importance of honesty, and I said, the truth is always bitter to the taste, but then turn sweet in your mouth. A lie is always sweet to the taste and then turn sour. Lie always needs something to prop it up. The truth will stand on its own and often will stand on its own. But time takes time, but becoming dishonest is a sure sign of a relapse. Harold?
Yes, it is. And Dr. Scott Peck, years ago in his book, The Road Less Traveled, which I saw on the shelf, so I grabbed it and was looking through it again. What a great piece of writing that is, and full of wonderful advice. And he explains in there how much easier it is to tell the truth than to lie, because once I've told one lie, then I have to tell another lie to cover the first one, two more to cover those first two, and I just don't have a good enough memory to do that anymore. Never did, really. So if you just tell the truth, you don't have to remember who you were talking to or what you said to who or when you said it or any of that stuff. You can just simply tell the truth. It's what a relief it is, and it's a huge part of my recovery. I think we have that nature inside that just wants us to lie and continue lying, but once we've had a little taste of this higher road, the road less traveled, there's really, for me, there's no going back. I mean, there's no comparison. It's such a much simpler life, and I can be focused on how to be more useful to God on a daily basis, and that is my goal now, to be more useful to God every day. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. The next with three would be impatience. Patience is bitter to my taste, but patience is bitter, but its fruits are sweet. Impatience is that we want it now. And my granddaughter will go back and forth and say, "Pop, I don't want to stand on this line." I says, "Honey, nobody wants to stand in line. But you know what? It's all about me." And she'll go, "No, it's all about me. No, honey, it's all about me." And we'll go back and forth until she starts to laugh. And then she realizes it really is all about me. Everybody, it's all about them. Everybody don't want to stand in line. So we become impatient. We have no ability to hang back, to relax, chill out. Things are not happening fast enough for others are not doing what they should or what you want them to do. Yeah, you're impatient with people, you're impatient with time, you're living on the edge. And it's
my favorite response often reminds me that time takes time. I love that. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. The next one, four, would be argumentativeness. The eye of a gnat on the head of a pin. I have the right, and I have to be right, and I have to win. Arguing small and ridiculous points of view indicates a need to always be right. Why don't you be reasonable and agree with me? Looking for an excuse to drink. Argument this, I would consider that part of sort of like anger. It's like a stepchild of anger. People would argue because they get a sense of energy from the argument and power, because they feel like they have no power, so they have to argue to bolster their self-esteem. They were told somewhere down their long negative past, maybe from a caregiver, that they weren't smart or they were stupid or they were dumb. How often does our parents, the people we love and depend on the most, gives us the worst information about ourselves? And to prove that, we have to be right to show that they were wrong. But in the end, all we're doing is proving they were right in the end. Our low self-esteem will make an argument. The Chinese say the first one who takes a poke at somebody has lost the argument.
Absolutely, and again, it just takes us back to the selfishness and the self-centeredness, and we can add to that the ego trip, because always having to be right is an ego trip, and it's so sad. it's so sad. In fact, when I see that begin to happen, it's an indication right there that, like you just said, a relapse is impending. And we try to head that off. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. But it just goes to show that this is a disease, and just waiting for an opening so that it can move in, make us suffer, and eventually die. I have a part of myself that wants me dead. Joseph?
I like to think ridicule is death to the ego, and the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. I tell my sponsees a little story about there's this young man, and as a young man, he heard that there was a guru in Tibet that knew the secret to life. And so excited about getting this information, he sold his home, his car, quit his job to get enough money to buy a ticket on a slow boat to China. He comes to China, and this guru, like most gurus, live on the top of this horrendous mountain. And he climbs frozen, covered mountain, bloody from the ascent. He comes to the shack. Of course, gurus always live in shacks. They're so smart, I don't get it. But he walks in, and he says, "Master, I understand you know the secret to life." He says, "Please tell me. I've come a long way." He said, "My son, the secret to life was never to argue." The young man was taken back. He says, "You don't understand, Master. I sold my house. I sold my car. I quit my job. I took a slow boat to China, and I climbed this hill that went on forever, this mountain that went on forever. There's got to be more to it than that." And the guru looked him in the eye and said, "You know, you could be right."
I like it.
The next number five is depression. Anger with no enthusiasm. Unreasonable, uncountable despair may occur in cycles and should be dealt with and talked about. I just did a recent post on that, I think it was in Facebook, about depression. We're not clinical psychologists, we're sponsors. We have no shingle to, even if we are a psychiatrist or psychologist, even if we're a doctor, that we there's no cure. We don't present some kind of regime or regimen for our sponsees. We share with them our experience, strength, and hope. If the depression, usually the rule of thumb, lasts more than 2 weeks, there's a good chance it might be clinical. And at that time, the suggestion should be for them to seek medical or psychiatric evaluation. The sponsor cannot do that, but alcohol and drugs are oftentimes depressants. And even if you were doing stimulants, once you get off the stimulant, the backside, the whiplash, is depression again. So alcohol is a depressive, so the chances are coming into recovery, you're going to have bouts of depression. If it's just normal, people have depression all the time. That's just the way of life. You get depressed and you get out of it. You do certain things. You take an action. I usually suggest to my sponsees a gratitude list. A gratitude list is when you write things that you're grateful for. I believe an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. And you start off, "Hey, I'm sober today. Hey, I have a roof over my head. You know, I got a car that runs. Hey, you know, I got a couple bucks in the bank. I got a job. I got a girlfriend. I got a dog that loves me. The dog doesn't know any better, but it loves me anyway." You'd be surprised how many things to be grateful for. "You know, I just got a clean bill of health from my doctor." So that'll help if you take the action. Just thinking about it and talking about it will not work as well as actually putting pen to paper and writing it. That's the action. Most people don't want to do the action, but if you do the action, I will promise you, you will get a positive result. Harold?
You know, inspirational speaker Wayne Dyer years ago said that he's never met a depressed jogger. And I agree with you. It's the key is action. When we get the blood circulating, we get some movement, some walking, some jogging, some swimming, something like that. That blood circulating will chase away depression 99% of the time. It's really most people don't really need a doctor. They don't need a psychiatrist. They don't need medication. If they will get some good exercise, and as you just said, put a pen to paper and work on themselves, the depression will be a thing of the past. So that, you know, and it took me years to figure out that when, because alcohol and marijuana are depressants, when I'm feeling depressed, it's not a good idea to take a drink or smoke a joint. It took me a long time to figure that out, but it is really true. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Most depression, if you wallow in your depression, this is my personal experience, if you wallow in it, it can turn into clinical if you're there, if you stay long enough. It's like gravity. It's going to keep pulling you further and further down until I believe, and I'm not a doctor, but I have spent the night at Holiday Inn Express, that if you wallow in your depression long enough, that there's a good chance your brain chemistry is going to start to change into clinical depression. I've had that personal experience where I could barely get out of bed. I mean, it took every ounce of my energy to get out of bed and get moving again. But I could see some people I've talked to, they can't even get out of bed at one point, and they wallow. It's wallowing in that depression. So get moving. Go do something. Go turn your thoughts to someone you can help and get moving. The next one, the sixth, is frustration. An unwatched pot boils immediately. At people, and also because things may be not going your way. Remember, everything is not going to be just the way you want it. I'm frustrated. Every time I try to do something, someone gets in my way. Something gets in my way. I don't know. Something's not right. You know what's not right? I'm not right. I'm not pausing when I'm agitated. I'm not taking a break. I'm not doing my prayers. I just heard recently that and I knew this from a long time, but people say, most people relapse, they stop going to meetings. That's down the road. When they stop going to meetings, things have happened before that. The number one reason I believe people relapse in recovery, they stop praying. They stop calling their sponsor. They stop taking that action. Then they stop going to meetings. And then a drink or a drug sounds like a good idea. You don't have to be frustrated. You could just relax and take a different road. Harold?
Well, absolutely. I agree with you that once they stop doing things, taking the actions, that once the relapse occurs, they're way down the road, having stopped a number of different things. And a lot of times, I mean, you've got these ideas on your website in the section on barriers to recovery, and you've got them listed here, and they have numbers, and that makes it nice to talk about them. But they don't ordinarily necessarily come in this order. And number eight, you have cockiness, and I call it overconfidence. Number seven, you have self-pity. I think those really go together, and they get us into a state of mind where then we become argumentative, impatient, frustrated, and those things lead to depression. Depression is the, as you said, anger without enthusiasm, but it results from being defensive, from blaming others, and from being mad at ourselves. There are a lot of things, a lot of mistakes that I've made that where I get angry with myself, and that is called guilt. So guilt, defensiveness, and blame add up to depression. Depression is that energy drain from all these other activities. It doesn't just come out of the blue. And one of the most prolific authors who was not at all spiritual and not in recovery either, but had a lot of things figured out, I think, in a helpful way, was Dr. David Viscott. He passed away with a heart attack in his early 50s, but wrote a lot of books. His most famous is called Risking. And in there he said, these negative emotions come in a particular sequence, and once we realize that sequence, it really helps. And so he said, anger, if we have a loss and we stuff it, we get anger. That's what anger is a suppressed pain. And a lot of people use alcohol to suppress their pain, and there are a lot of angry drunks. And then if we suppress the anger, it turns in on ourselves, then we get blame, then we turn it outward and we get guilt, then we turn it outward and get blame. And those three, the anger, guilt, and blame, are such an energy drain that that's where depression comes from. He said understanding it in sequence really has helped a lot of people. I know it helped me, and I really appreciate some of the people who have listened carefully enough to figure out some of these sequences, because it's sometimes like picking a lock on a safe. We've got to get the right sequence of things. But ironically, that's the sequence to the problem. The solution is just a willingness to jump out and say to yourself, I want to learn everything I can from this situation. That willingness to learn seems to unlock a lot of these doors that keep us in the prison of addiction. He didn't put it that way, but that's my view of it. A willingness to learn, a willingness to talk, to write, maybe have a good cry over things. That's what he talked about, talking and writing. And so that's what we're also talking about with the 12 steps. Talk to your sponsor, and with a pen and paper, write about the 12 steps. And that's what sponsorship is about, and that's what working the steps is about. That's what recovery is about. And so the problems are many, and they're varied. The solution is largely the same, regardless of what drug it is we were using to escape, regardless of the problem or our pattern of drinking or our pattern of drugs, or which, you know, a lot of people these days are taking these pain pills. Even people that take their pain pills strictly according to doctor's orders still end up with dependency, because the brain changes when we put those chemicals in there. Especially pain pills, the brain starts to shut down the little pumps, and we're in big trouble. A couple months ago, I talked to a lady who had been 2.5 years with a ruptured disc in her back and on pain pills, taking them exactly the way the doctor said, and she was miserable. They weren't designed to be taken for such a long period of time. I don't know whether these doctors can't read. there's a book, a big thick book called The Physician's Desk Reference, the PDR, and they're supposed to read that and read the updated one to see about drug interactions and length of time and so forth. And so many people in a bind, and they've been doing just what the doctor said to do. So this is very complex. But if we will be willing to learn, if we will be willing to talk and willing to write, and if, as you just said, willing to pray, that's something I added, not Dr. Viscott, but he wasn't a man of God. But I think you're right on the mark. Willing to pray, willing to write, willing to talk, that we can find our way out of this maze. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. You ever notice when you have a toothache and you get to the dentist's office, you can never find the tooth that hurts?
Oh, they found mine.
Well, I know a lot of times. I've had the experience. I'll talk for myself. I've gone to the dentist, I've had a toothache, and I can't find it. He's got to poke around finding it. But me, before the incident, it was really aching. I mean, I knew which tooth it was and all of it. And I get there, and it kind of stopped. And somebody said, once you take an action, the action was actually addressing the problem. The brain kind of shuts down the pain.
Because oh, I see what you mean.
Your brain, you've taken an action to address the problem. Wow.
Yes.
It's happened to
well,
the
and it's like I have the same experience with my car. It won't run. I get it. I have it towed to the mechanic. He climbs in, turns the key, zoom, it goes right off. You know, runs fine for the mechanic.
Yeah. Well, I guess the car took an action and everything was well. I think it might be spiritual. Number seven is self-pity. Poor me, poor me, poor me, another drink of alcohol. I have it as a sinkhole with a lavish banquet of despair. Why do these things happen to me? Why must I be an alcoholic? Nobody appreciates all I'm doing for them. There was a cartoon back in the day called Little Abner, and he lived in a place called Dogpatch. And one of the characters there was Joe, and he had a name with no vowels in it. It was like D-W-Z-K, Dizwick, Joe Dibswick. And there was no vowels, and he had a dark cloud and a lightning bolt over his head. Because it always happened to Joe. He was a natural victim. Self-pity is an indication that you're going down the sinkhole. May 5th, we call it Sinkhole de Mayo. You're going down because it's all about you again. Self-pity. Selfishness, self-delusion. Number eight is cockiness. That's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me? Got it made, no longer fear alcoholism. Going into drinking situations to prove to others you have no problem. I got no problem. No problem. The problem is I have no solution. Do this often enough, and it will wear down your defenses. I like to think if you hang around the barbershop long enough, eventually you'll get a haircut. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and has been around. You know how long alcohol has been around as a distilled beverage, Harold?
I think since caveman days.
I don't know that. I know that was part of the pay for building the pyramids, that the Egyptians were the first ones to ferment beer. Now, I'm sure probably alcohol occurs infrequently in nature because it's the fermentation of rotted fruit, and I think some elephants got the hang of it. at a certain part of the year, they go party, and they know where this alcohol-laden fruit is, and they have a great old time. But as far as man goes, I believe it was the Egyptians. So that's how the pyramids got built. I like to think of it this way. I don't know what the question is, but I know the answer is beer. Number nine is complacency. Smug as a bug and oblivious to the fly swatter snap. Drinking was the furthest thing from my mind. Not drinking was no longer a conscious thought either. It is dangerous to let up on disciplines because everything is going well. Always to have a little fear is a good thing. More relapses occur when things are going well than otherwise. And we got to that fear deal. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's been around for a very long time. Once we let up on that action, we're setting ourselves up for a relapse. Harold?
That's, yes, I agree completely. Once we let up, the one that used to get me, though, is expecting too much from others. And it, one of the tricks the enemy pulled on me was to, I had a rough time with higher power, and the suggestion was early on, the temptation, I might say, was to make a person my higher power, a power greater than me, turn my life and will over to somebody else. It works out a lot better because then if things don't work, you can blame them. So that created a mess for a long time, long, long time. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Now, normally, we have 3 minutes, so we'll have to do the close for the WNAH, and then we can continue on until we finish the post. Expecting too much from others. Now I am a sheep, but all they can see is the old wolf's clothing. I've changed. Why hasn't everyone else? It's a plus if they do, but it's still your problem. If they don't, they may not trust you yet. May still be looking for further proof. You cannot expect others to change their lifestyles just because you have. This is very odd. This is a common phenomenon in recovery. We break our arms, patting ourselves in the back. Hey, look, I'm sober now. I'm doing what everybody else is doing now, and I want you to recognize that. I'm no longer the wolf. I'm a sheep now. But all they see is the old wolf's clothing. You'd been a wolf for so long. All of a sudden, you expect people to embrace you. So now you expect them to completely change and, you know, call you back, have your children that you have abandoned to bring you back in, and a wife that you might have beat on or did heinous things to. All of a sudden, you're a sinner. You're a saint now. I like to think of. There's nothing as unforgiving as an old road that's just been mended as a sinner that has just become a saint.
Well, people, yes, and my first sponsor used to say, a lot of people in early recovery want congratulations for having run out of a burning building. I mean, come on.
11, letting up on disciplines. You know what the problem with discipline is, Harold?
It takes...
Motivation.
Go ahead.
Discipline takes motivation. The problem with motivation, not now becomes never. The problem with discipline, it takes motivation. If you're bored, you're boring. prayer, meditation, daily inventory, AA attendance. This can stem from complacency or boredom. You cannot afford to be bored with your program. The cost of relapse is always, always too great.
And the discipline that I really wanted to, that I really needed more of, and still do, as you can recognize, is picking up the phone. Picking up that phone. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. 12, use of mood-altering chemicals. One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. Go ask Alice when she starts to fall. That was from The White Rabbit. You may feel the need to ease things with a pill, and your doctor might go along with you. You may never have had a problem with chemicals other than alcohol before, but you can easily lose sobriety. Starting this way is about the most subtle way to have a relapse. Remember, you will be cheating. The reverse of this is true for drug-dependent persons who start to drink. The key to sobriety is altering your perception of reality artificially. However, whatever form that takes, to take you away from the moment. Well, I got some bad news and I got some good news. The good news is this too shall pass. But life, for the most part, is fraught with pain. Living is just a painful experience for most. Not for all, not always, but it comes. And to run away from that pain is to run away from reality. It's not going to be painful forever. It'll pass. And you'll grow from that. You cannot be comfortable and grow spiritually. You will be uncomfortable to grow spiritually. If you try to take away that pain and try to remain in comfort using artificial means, you will pay a price down the road. And the price is always greater than the amount of reality that you've missed. You're missing your life, however that might look. Anytime you take a pill, a drug, or an alcohol, you're opting to die and not opting to live. Harold?
Yes, I agree. Any mind-altering substance is part of the problem, not part of the solution, even if there's a prescription written. And running the risk of being very unpopular, we've got to remind people that there are a lot of doctors out there who actually get a kickback from the pharmaceutical companies for writing the prescriptions that they write. So be very careful, folks. Very, very careful. I like this part about forgetting gratitude. Go ahead, Joseph.
Well, the next section, my mom, as a matter of fact, of a drug, she was a drug addict. And I really didn't really, until I got into the program, really realize that. Back early on, I guess it was in the early 60s, late 50s, I think it was late 50s, there was doctors that were giving out these diet pill boxes. And they were diet pills, I don't know, with mollies, blue mollies, and amphetamines, and then they give you downers, and it was to lose weight, and she'd love her speed, you know, and but she got it from a doctor, and these folks, as long as it came from a doctor, it was okay, and that woman died addicted to drugs and never realized that she was an addict because she got from a doctor. What?
That is so sad.
Yeah, she died. She lived most of her adult life as an addict and never knew it. And got her daughter addicted also and never knew it. They were in such denial about it because it came from the doctor. Forgetting gratitude. An attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. You may be wanting too much. We must skip that. Wanting too much. It's not that we want too much, is that too much has happened. Do not set goals you cannot reach with normal effort. Do not expect when good things that you were not expecting happen. You will get what you are entitled to as long as you do your best, but maybe not as soon as you think you should. Happiness is not having what you want, but wanting what you have. Especially in early recovery, we want to catch up where we had left off. We want more. We want to express ourselves. We want to make money. We want to get the big house, all of that. And it's not happening fast enough. My experience is that usually what will happen, there's a relapse in that because it's not going to happen on your timetable. We have to learn, and I had to learn the hard way too. I take the next right action and then leave the outcome to that action to a loving God. And if I don't get what I thought I wanted at the time, you know, that's okay. Because I took the action and it wasn't in the cards for me. God had something else planned. And when I accept that, my serenity isn't proportionate to my acceptance. Forgetting gratitude. An attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. You may be looking negatively on your life. Concentrating on problems that are still not totally corrected. Nobody wants to be a Pollyanna, but it's good to remember where you started from and how much better life is now. Harold?
This is my favorite assignment to sponsees. Is and I like to ask them to write down. A lot of people want their relationships to be instantly better, and so I recommend two things. One is a total ban on criticism. The other is to make a list of the things we appreciate about our partner, about our spouse, and that really seems to help a lot and help us with the 12 steps. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. An attitude of gratitude. That's it. It's in the scriptures. Pray continuously. We keep in your heart the Psalms, the songs of David, and religious song, and in thanksgiving. That's the gratitude. Be grateful for where you came. Do we not come from where we stand? We've come a long way. Most of us are miracles. A lot of us would be dead in prison or in the asylum. Never forget that. How that experience could make you a maximum service to God and your fellows. I believe when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And this primes us for that. And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA, action and more action, for faith without works is dead. 15, it can't happen to me. You might not think, not me, not my body, not my friends, not my life. Think twice. This is dangerous thinking. Almost anything can happen to you and is more likely to if you get careless or complacent. Remember, you have a progressive disease and you will be in worse shape if you relapse. My experience is when I see people go out, after even short-term or sometimes long-term sobriety, it's like they never left the drinking circus. They come back so beat up in such a short period of time, it's spiritual. You can't get that much beat up in such a short period of time. The body breaks down. It's like the body's not going to do it. The spirit's not going to do it, and they come in crushed. I've never seen anybody come back and say, "Hey, it's gotten better out there." The disease is doing push-ups out in the parking lot without you. And you go back in and you embrace that again. It will beat you to a pulp in a very short period of time, and you're lucky to come back into the rooms to swallow that pride. People are just glad to see you back. That's your pride that you're swallowing. They're not into judging you or condemning you, because we're alcoholics. That's what we do. And it's, as for the grace of God, go I. That's the way we look at it. When somebody comes in, we're glad to see him come in, because if that was me, I hope I have the intestinal fortitude to make the trip back. But I don't have to make the trip back if I don't leave. Harold?
Absolutely. The young people these days call it being 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And I can't even tell you the number of young people that say it'll never happen to me, never happen to me. But some people have to learn the hard way. Every once in a while I get someone who can watch something awful happen to someone else, and they can say, "Wow, I better shape up here." Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. And 16, and to the close, omnipotence. There's only one that's omnipotent. That one is God. The ego binging on pride. That's what I put down for omnipotence. The ego binging on pride. This is a feeling that results from a combination of many of the above. You have all the answers for yourself and others. No one can tell you anything. You ignore suggestions or advice from others. Relapse is probably imminent unless drastic changes take place. Harry Truman said, once you know it all, that's when you start to learn. Bill W. said, we had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness. We were now teachable. Omnipotence is about being not teachable. Humility is when every man, woman, and child becomes your teacher. I like to consider myself the perpetual student. I'm even willing to learn from my children. That's hard. That's one of the tough ones. I can learn better from my young grandchildren, but my children are harder to learn. To keep quiet enough to learn from, you know, the wise man, okay, I'll learn from him, but how about the fool? You know, even the fool has a tale to tell. If you're humble enough to listen. Harold, any last words?
Well, my first sponsor used to say, keep this in mind, there is a God and you're not it. So that's enough out of me. Joseph,
thanks, Harold,
having me on.
You're welcome. It's always good to have you on there. You make it easier on me to... You know, as much as I'm enamored with my own voice and thoughts, it's always nice to have someone on a counterpoint and give information that otherwise not would be made available. And you have that. And you're really an asset to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and a good man doing a good work. And I appreciate your time and your effort in the behalf of Rum Radio and this broadcast. Like usual,
you're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you. And like usual, remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.